It's the most wonderful time of the year. With the kids jingle belling and everyone telling you be of good cheer.
Oh my God, are you okay?
Call the ambulance!
That's right, folks. Christmas can kill you. I'll tell you exactly how and when to the hour in just a few moments.
The Safari Park.
You're killing me, Larry.
Hello, Larry.
Hello, Larry.
Hats off to Larry.
Larry. Fucking Larry.
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 Larry. Larry, get into bed now.
Come on, Larry.
Larry. Larry. Here we are, 7 days to Christmas. And the smartest thing you can do is maybe sleep right through it. Because research proves Christmas can be lethal. The British Medical Journal just published a study that says the deadliest day of our lives is Christmas Eve. I'm not making this up. They did a massive study in Sweden. It covered 16 years of every single heart attack that occurred in that country during that time period. Over 280,000. They're so sure of their data, they aren't even calling it a study. They call it reality. They found some patterns about when heart attacks were most likely. There was a slightly higher risk before 8 a.m., and more generally on Mondays. Well, that makes perfect sense. Mondays suck. There was a higher risk on New Year's Day and the midsummer holidays, with increased risks surrounding major sporting events. I'll bet, especially when you've got money in the game. And New Year's sucks. And in midsummer, when blobos who've been jogging from the kitchen table to the fridge decide to run a marathon and then boom, coronary infarction. No mystery there. But they found the greatest risk by far was on Christmas Eve, where the chances of having a heart attack shot up by 37%. 37%! That's huge! Imagine if you got a 37% raise, or were 37% taller. Would you step out your front door if you knew there was a 37% chance you'd croak if you did? Not only do they have the day figured, they've got the time. The hour of doom is 10 p.m. That makes sense, too, because by 10 p.m., we've abandoned all hope of next-day delivery by Amazon. You could run down to CVS and try to salvage your relationship with some cheap ship perfume or a $15 designer watch or earbuds, but those are probably sold out. And she'll hate you even more if you dare hand her that kind of garbage on the most wonderful day of the year. So we just opt to drink heavily and lapse into deep, deep despair. The scientists believe Christmas Eve is when people experience emotional stress, and that affects heart health. Quote, "We do not know for sure, but emotional distress with acute experience of anger, anxiety, sadness, grief, and stress increases the risk of heart attack. Excessive food intake, alcohol, long-distance traveling may also increase the risk." Well, thank you, Captain Obvious. You knew that without 16 years of research. Christmas is a fucking pressure cooker. And for what? What's the payoff? Since Halloween, we've been blasted by Madison Avenue propaganda designed to make us feel inadequate. Why isn't there a shiny new Benz wrapped in a red bow parked in front of your mansion for your girlfriend, or wife? Why aren't you sliding a 5-carat rock onto her finger just because she's her? Why isn't your Christmas tree nearly fully obscured by the pile of lavish gifts for your kids? Or worst of all, why aren't you in a romantic relationship at all? What's wrong with you? Well, there's an easy fix. Just whip out that MasterCard and charge yourself into crushing fucking debt at 20% interest. And if you don't, why, you're a goddamn Scrooge. Where is your Christmas spirit? There used to be a saying from religious folks, keep Christ in Christmas. Well, that rocket left the launch pad years ago, and it crashed into an asteroid never to be seen again. There needs to be another name for all the stupid commercial shit. Keep Christmas the religious holiday for nativity sets and carols and babies in swaddling clothes and the three wise guys and so on. But then we've got to come up with something else for the acquisition of future landfill. And no, it's not just another Christmas knockoff like Festivus or Kwanzaa. No, it needs to be about two things only. Debt and stress. Why don't we call it Stressmas? Because when you rack up debt, you're going to be stressed to the max. Instead of Tubby Smiling Santa Claus, which is a German name, is it not? Let's replace him with another famous German, Joseph Goebbels. He was that little mousy prick with the permanent scowl and the vicious rodent face. And he was Minister of Propaganda, so he's perfect. He was a living stress machine. Let's put him in a little red suit trimmed in black leather. Instead of the stocking cap, we'll give him a motorcycle hat with a chain on the peak. He can suck on a cigarette holder and tell us all to have a Merry Stressmas and insist that we buy more and more and more stuff at 20% interest. It's on. There's no turning back now, unless you can hop a flight to, what, Indonesia, Ramat, or someplace without Christmas. And it's been on since Thanksgiving. I witnessed a fantastic Stressmas scene just a few days ago in a little Italian joint I've been going to for years. Not a chain, which means everything is better. The food, the service, the owner usually buys us around. It's that kind of place. It's old school. No fucking TVs, ever. Election night, Super Bowl, end of the world, Judgment Day, doesn't matter. No TV. And that's a beautiful thing for fellowship, for digestion, and people watching and eavesdropping. The room tone is pretty hushed in this place. So if you want to, it's not that hard to tune in on conversations of your fellow diners. So the place is all done up for Christmas. The tree, the lights, the whole nine yards. And one table over from ours sits two couples. They seem to know each other very well. The women actually resembled one another, probably sisters, out with their husbands for a nice feed. I saw at least 3 bottles of wine opened during their meal, and the volume of their laughter slowly ratcheted up in proportion to the consumption of grape. Everyone was having a fantabulous time. I guess 2 of them were visiting from out of town, because after dessert, gift-wrapped Christmas presents appeared on the table. One woman was first to open hers, and she smiles big when the box reveals a gold bracelet. Kiss, kiss, I love you. Merry Christmas, honey. Then, her husband opens his box to find a Nikon camera. It looked pretty slick. Then, the broad with the bracelet urges her sister to open her gift next, but her husband says, no, 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 I'll go next. Not like he was in a big hurry to open his gift, but more like he was inferring that his gift to his wife was going to be something amazing, something magnificent, something to die for. Well, by now, I'm really into this scene and gawking at this foursome to the chagrin of my wife and kids. But I've got to know what the big reveal is going to be. I'm paying close attention now and picking up names. The guy opening his gift is Brad, and his wife is Fiona. Now, Brad is really stretching out his unboxing, and his box is beautifully wrapped in some high-end paper with a cloth ribbon, you know, very upscale. He isn't so much tearing open this box as undressing it. Big flourishes as he pulls the ends of the bow and then unties the center knot. As he opens the paper, he's actually slipping a finger under the folds like he doesn't want to tear it. I'm starting to hate Brad. I want to slap the back of his head and say, open the fucking gift already. Finally, he gets the damn box open and it's a pair of sunglasses. Oliver Peoples sunglasses. He smiles big, puts them on his face, and everyone oohs and ahs and laughs as he turns left profile and says something about Steve McQueen, and then he flips the other profile and says George Clooney. And he leaves the sunglasses on his face. He kind of looked like Dr. Strangelove, and so did his glasses. Now he points to his wife, Fiona, and nods his permission to proceed. And she's fingering a box that looks to be about an inch thick, maybe 6 wide and 9 inches long. It, too, is elaborately and expensively wrapped. But Fiona, she's not wasting any time. She tears right through the paper, and beneath it all is a plush red box. Looks like Cartier, but not quite. But it has to be jewelry, definitely jewelry. But what? Wrong size for a bracelet or a watch. Way too big for earrings. Then I flash on those box dimensions and why they are familiar, and it hits me. Julia Roberts in Pretty Woman. That scene in the Beverly Wilshire Hotel where Richard Gere hands Julia a box with the ruby and diamond necklace for her to wear on their big night out. The box has a very similar look. And Gere's necklace was worth $250,000. No wonder Brad wanted Fiona to go last. No gift could follow what was going to come out of that box. It has to be something amazing. Carats and carats of shimmering ice, or platinum and rubies, maybe a cascade of emeralds. By this time, I'm not the only one staring at the table. Most of the restaurant is, including my family. The suspense is killing us all. Fiona looks at Brad. Her eyes are sparkling. She bites her lower lip in lustful anticipation and opens the hinged box. And she stares and stares. Besides Fiona, I'm one of the few people who can see exactly what Fiona is staring at. It's a dish. A saucer. And it looks as plain as something you might find in any cafeteria. And I'm thinking, what the fuck? Maybe she's some kind of dish collector, and this saucer is from, I don't know, Napoleon or a pharaoh or some shit. There's a little metal plaque at the base, which accounted for the box being rectangular, not square, but only a seagull could read the inscription from my vantage point. But I see Fiona scan the plaque, and she quietly reads it out loud. All my love, Brad. I see Fiona's eyes dart to her sister's wrist, where her Christmas gold bracelet, plenty chunky, is catching the halogens. And then Fiona looks back at the saucer. And then, with her retinas throwing a death ray George Lucas could never have imagined, she bores into Brad's Oliver Peoples shades. I almost think I can see the lenses begin to smoke and distort and melt as her hate beams focus, and she hisses.
A dish. A fucking dish.
Brad is still grinning, maybe more broadly than before. He says,
not just any dish, dear. That is Lalique.
Fiona taps a French-tipped nail on the saucer.
That is $50. You asshole.
Brad slides his new shades down his nose. By the way, the floor for Oliver Peoples is around $400. And then Brad says,
"My dear, it's the thought that counts."
Fiona inhales deeply through her nose and tells Brad,
"Yes, and I'm thinking. I'm thinking divorce and community property."
It's clear. A flashpoint is imminent, and Fiona's sister interjects, trying to defuse the tension with praise for the wine. Something about, "Isn't this Cabernet yummy?" And Fiona picks up her glass and looks at it. She holds it up and steers it to the warm downlight above the table. There's a long silence, so long that other diners lose interest and return to their meals. Conversations are resumed. Utensils clink against plates. A cocktail shaker adds to the susurrus. But I'm still watching. Something tells me Fiona isn't quite finished. She drains her glass of Fab Cab and quickly refills it. She looks at Brad and says,
"Brad, I'm going to fly right out of your life."
And Brad tells Fiona,
"Should be easy, my dear. You already have the crow's feet. Maybe you'll sprout wings, too."
Without a word, she flicks her wrist and pitches her wine into Brad's face. Brad doesn't react. He says nothing. He just extends his index finger and clears the lenses of his sunglasses like a windshield wiper. I try not to burst out laughing, and it took a hell of an effort. We all wondered if Brad heard from Fiona's lawyer the very next day, or if she creased his skull with a plate back home that night. It sure seemed like he went to great lengths to diss her in front of her sister and his brother-in-law. Part of the stressmas madness isn't just the financial strain. It strains on endless levels. If you've been dating some chick since last Christmas, aren't they usually expecting an engagement ring for this Christmas? Have you ever been at her house and all the relatives start carpet-bombing you with delicate hints like,
"When are you going to make an honest woman out of Jennifer?"
Which, not too subtly, implies that she's a slut, doesn't it? People are weird. There's all the stress and anxiety of gift selection. Will she like what you give her? Clothing is the worst. Oh, those fucking stupid women's sizes. Size 0 is the one I like best. I guess that's the size blouse Brad should buy Fiona, or any woman who isn't there anymore. And what if you get her a size too big? Then she'll be pissed off.
"What, do you think I'm fat? Is that what you think?"
And the flip side of that is this. I knew a guy who had a thing for larger women. He splurged on a very pricey tennis bracelet for his plus-sized girlfriend, but never bothered to sneak a tape measure around her arm. She opened it on Christmas morning with all the family there, and it needed at least another inch or two to span her girthy wrist. Cue the tears, the drama, and the breakup. Nobody wins. Merry Christmas. Maybe you've got a significant other like Brad, but a saucer is just too obvious. Have you considered giving her war core clothing? It's all the rage with the fashionistas this season. Apparently, they think this Christmas might be the last Christmas, so there's this whole line of apocalypse outfits, jumpsuits in safety cone orange and acid rain green and hip waders and balaclavas in body bag black. Might be the perfect gift to ignite a breakup. Of course, a lot of the crap is made for guys, and normally we'd love that shit, except this shit is from Prada and Calvin Klein and not remotely functional. Which means it's probably really for chicks who want to dress like dystopian guys who are not preppers or survivalists. I'll post some pictures of war core outfits at the show page at thatlarryshow.com. See if you agree that they would make great gifts for the woman you'd like to get out of your life. So will you set an alarm on your phone for 10 p.m. this Stressmas Eve? Take some prophylactic aspirin or digitalis? Is your cholesterol a little higher than it should be? How about your triglycerides? Has the boss been breaking your balls? Does he resemble Joey Goebbels? Stressing out over Christmas is really silly. If somebody pulls a face or a mood because they don't like a gift or didn't get a gift, is that really someone you need in your life anyway? Now, this episode has been dedicated to the Grinch side of the holidays. For those of you who are true believers, I have a very special one lined up for you and the kids, and I'll have it posted by Monday, December 24, in case you have a half hour to fill on Christmas Eve. I'll be reading a very cool Christmas story, something of a hidden gem, suitable for the whole family. No naughty words, not one, I promise. I did something similar last year when I read The Little Match Girl and a couple of other classics. You might want to download it and play it right around, 10 p.m. on Christmas Eve. It will definitely de-stress you, maybe even save your life. And before Christmas Eve, we'll have a special nativity episode of Sinner's Sunday. Stop by patreon.com/thatlarryshow and join the dojo, where you'll find over 24 bonus episodes as well as signed books, custom recordings, and more. Drop me a line anytime at thatlarryshow@gmail.com or call me at 302-71-LARRY. I'll see you Sunday, and until that time, take no dish.